Nah, I seen it myself. I seen it myself. You hear that from guys like Capella. Usually he's catching the ball and laying it up from CP or James Harden. His job is not as hard. When your job is that hard, you know, you can't just come out there and say shit like that. I don't expect that from CP and James and Ariza and the rest of the guys like that because they know how hard it is to come out and do that every night. Capella, catch and dunk every night. It's pretty easy for him.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. A couple of other Twitter accounts to go and follow. Go follow Basketball Monster at BaskMonster and the Locked On Network at Locked On NBA Net. And make sure you're also checking out LockedOnFantasyBasketball.com. I've got a few new writers who are going to be coming on board there with a little bit of extra fantasy content for you guys to check out as well. We're going to be breaking down the eight games, because we're going at halftime here of the last game. Of that Clippers game, Clippers and Timberwolves game. We're going to be previewing the five-game Tuesday in the NBA and talk about all the action and everything that went down on a weird and wonderful Monday. So,
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start with, the title of this show, which I have titled Woj Bombs, because plenty of things did go down during the day today. First of all, I wake up with reports from the Spurs and Kawhi Leonard of discontent brewing between the parties as to how his injury has been handled. I know it was a Woj report. I know it was a Zach Lowe co-authored report as well, but it didn't seem like there was much in that report saying that, you know, we know that Kawhi's struggling with this injury and, you know, his comeback had been a pain and there was a level of frustration with him with the injury and a marginal talk about some sort of frustration with the organization. I'm not denying or not questioning Woj or Lowe or any of their reporting. It just didn't seem like there was much in that story, so I'm not really too concerned about anything that's going on there with the Spurs. But it was a weird thing to wake up to. The next thing we had... And I know this is what everyone wants me to talk about, and that is that Jason Kidd has been fired as the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has heard that news already, but if you haven't, he's gone. The assistant coach, Joe Prouty, will be the head coach for the remainder of the season for the Bucks. And I had so many notifications of people tagging me in Woj's report, telling me about this. Oh, you must be wrapped. I'm not necessarily wrapped. I don't root for people to lose their jobs, even though Kidd is a shitbag dicknose who didn't deserve a job in the first place, who dicked his way out of a Brooklyn Nets organization, screwing them over, and then heads to a Milwaukee job where he had no right in getting it or retaining it for as long as he did. Throw in the fact that he's a terribly shit bloke off the court with domestic violence charges, drunk driving stuff, just an absolute shit bloke of all time. I don't want necessarily people to lose their jobs, but I'm definitely not going to be spilling any tears over the fact that Jason Kidd is no longer coaching an NBA team. He's not cut out for it. He's not qualified for it. He got that job based on the fact that he was a good player through no coaching experience at all, and he sucked at it. He was terrible. He had too many hands in personnel moves. He was bad, and I don't think that he will be coaching in the NBA again. He said, I can't wait to get back out there and get the next job opportunity. Mate, if an NBA team hires you, let's rephrase it. An NBA team might, because there is lots of bad management going on for some of these teams, but they shouldn't. He's dicked around two organizations in the front office. He's shown ineptitude in coaching and relationships, and that's part of the reason why he was fired. He has frayed relationships with the front office and with some of the players as well. So I don't really know which team is going to take that jump, and whoever does, I do really feel sorry for you. This is the bloke that brought us the strategy of fouling up three, missing free throws up three as well. Just stuff that makes, sorry, fouling up four, missing free throws up three. Just ludicrous stuff. The first half benching of Malcolm Brogdon, you know, inconsistent rotations, which haven't, to be honest though, that hasn't been too much of a problem for Kidd this season. He is just not cut out to be an NBA coach, and Milwaukee's finally come to their senses. Now, what they do with this position, not this season because we know what's happening, but for the future, there's going to be everyone that's interested in this job. So they're going to have massive, massive opportunities to get themselves a significantly good head coach, which could push this team into being a top two or top three team in the next 3 to 4 seasons. They've got the talent there. It's all going to be about, do they get the right coach and can they work with those players? I do have to give Kidd some credit for developing Giannis and moving him on ball more, which is something he wasn't doing for those first few seasons. So I do give Jason some credit for that, but some of his other moves, not necessarily the greatest part of what he was able to do. This doesn't take anything away from his Hall of Fame career as a player, but a certified shit bloke off the court and a bad NBA coach, he's not around. Now, the immediate question that people ask is, Josh, what does this do for fantasy? And the answer is not much. And people have this, and reputations are always hard to shake. I talk about that all the time. Oh, Kidd, man, his rotations, they weren't that bad this season. We saw the occasional dickery of Malcolm Brogdon, you know, have his minutes reduced, but over the last 3 weeks, he'd been playing like 34, 35 a night. He'd gotten it right. We'd seen last season his, I'm only going to play two center shtick and then play three centers every single night and have no idea how that was going to go. That had disappeared this season. That wasn't a problem at all. We knew what we were getting from Thon McCur and Johnny Henson on nearly every night. We saw Brogdon move into the starting lineup and get that. We had that ridicularity on the bench of Jason Terry, of Sterling Brown, all these guys cutting into Malcolm Brogdon's minutes. We also had the sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick, who I found out today has blocked me on Twitter, for I have absolutely no idea why he has blocked me. I didn't follow him to begin with, but he has gone out and blocked a whole bunch of media people. So shout out to you, sexy boy, for having thin skin and blocking people who weren't even following you. But that sort of stuff had gone by the wayside. So we knew what, Middleton was getting a ton of minutes. Giannis was getting a ton of minutes. Bledsoe was getting his minutes. Over the last 2 weeks, he'd realized that Brogdon was getting those minutes. John Henson was getting his minutes. There's nothing to really go, well, now that Kidd's gone, we're going to see these big, big games and huge, consistent minutes, because it had been happening. Now, Brogdon went off in today's game, but that's in large part due to the fact that Giannis was out, and that enabled him to have that extra opportunity. So I don't think that it's solely a factor of Kidd being fired, because again, you go back and look at the logs, and you can see that he was playing big, big minutes, even in blowout losses or big wins. He was getting those minutes over the last couple of weeks, and a consistent rotation seemed to have been found. So that's not something that I changed. Now, Mark Roberts brought up something interesting today with Kidd's defense, which has had lots of issues over the time, but they are a team that goes for steals quite a lot. And we saw, in particular, you can see the change in Eric Bledsoe's steal numbers coming from Phoenix to Milwaukee. His steal numbers jumped through the roof. So if they decide to go a little bit away from Kidd's defense, which wasn't working, then we might see steal rates drop for Middleton, for Yanni, for Bledsoe, for Brogo, all those sort of guys. They might see their steal numbers drop, which of course would then lead them to have a lower fantasy vote. We also may see guys like Middleton and Antetokounmpo not play 40 minutes a night. So that might have an impact there. But overall, I don't think there's much of an issue. It's great for Bucks basketball in general, assuming they get the next hire right. But I think this is a perfect opportunity for them and something they needed to do. And obviously something I've been calling for quite a while. You're all well aware of that, I am sure. Let's now go on. Actually, the last part of the Woj bomb was the Cleveland Cavaliers apparently had a meeting where they were all picking on Kevin Love and questioning whether he was actually ill in that game against the Thunder, and Love was clapping back and defending himself. And that word of that meeting got out to Woj somehow. Just weird shit continually happens with the Cavs. They are stinking at the moment. They are just rotted, fetid piece of basketball flesh. They are struggling in a big way. They can very easily turn it around, but the integration of Isaiah Thomas hasn't gone well for Love, especially offensively, something that I did talk about quite extensively. And obviously chemistry issues appearing with this team, and I think a trip back to a fifth finals for them would be unexpected. I think it's fifth finals? No, fourth finals in a row. I think would be an unexpected... unexpected, is that the right word? I wouldn't be banking on that happening, but they have got time to turn it around. But this is not a good run of outs for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's go to the monstrous line of the night. And there's no one else it could have been. It's Boog Cousins, 44-24-10 with 5 triples, 4 steals and a block. He was 13 of 29 from the field. He was 13 of 14 from the free throw line. Boog is the 6th ranked player this season, averaging 25.5, 13-5 with 2.2 triples, 1.7 steals and 1.5 blocks. Currently on pace to be a triple 1.5 player. He's at 47 from the field, which is up from last season, 75 from the line, around that same number. And yes, his turnovers are through the roof, 5 turnovers per game. You know my thoughts on turnovers. Do not give a shit. He's at 36% on his threes, and he is absolutely crushing fantasy value, where you could have drafted him probably outside the first round in a lot of cases, and he is putting that value really, you know, comfortably smashing through it. And he's been awesome, and this was a huge, huge game. I thought that Davis was having an opportunity to go big against the Bulls, and he was all right, but it was obviously Boog who got that, who got the majority of that value in this game. The waiver wire line of the night in the same game goes to Jaren Grant. It was a double overtime game, so Jaren had 22, 5, and 13 with Chris Dunn out. 2 triples, 2 steals, a block. He was 6 of 7 from the field and hit all 8 of his free throws with Grant, not with Grant, with Dunn out. Grant's a guy that you want to go and add. I think that you could see 2 to 3 more games missing from Chrissy Dunn as he deals with his concussion. And Grant showed at the start of the season he was a guy that had some value. He put together some interesting games, or some valuable games to begin the year when Dunn was out with that finger issue. He had a double-double. He had a 13-8-9 game. He had a couple of nice games, especially for assists. So if you're in need of short-term assist value, then Jaren Grant is a guy you can add. But of course, once Dunn returns, he goes back to minutes in the teens and probably even lower than what he was seeing before, with all the talk that Fred Hoiberg is going to use Zach LaVine as a point guard more often. But he is your waiver wire line of the night. The double overtime helped him, a huge performance there from him. The young gun of the night does go to Malcolm Brogdon of the Milwaukee Bucks, 32-4-2. It was really close between him and the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray. 3 triples, 3 steals, 1 block, 11 of 14 from the field, and 7 of 8 from the free throw line. As I said, over the last 6 games, he's playing 35 minutes a night. Over the last 15, he's playing 33. So the numbers have been fairly consistent. He is a must-own guy now that they have moved him. And he was probably a guy you needed to hold anyway, even with the 24-minute dickery through December that he was copping. But in the last month, 72nd-ranked player, 33 minutes, 15-4-3, a steal, a 3, and shooting just extraordinarily efficiently, 53 from the field, 89 from the line, for a true shooting of over 61%. That is amazing as a point guard or starting shooting guard, however you want to phrase it. And in those last 6 games, even better, with a true shooting of 67%, hitting 56% of his shots and 41% from 3. He is a guy, I guess, with a decently limited upside, given he is already 25 and probably already moving into the peak of his career, and with Eric Bledsoe around. But if they decide they're going to continue to run him at the 2, which I think is totally fine, although the return of Jabari Parker for at least next season, if Jabari does come back, that could push him back to the bench, move Chrissy Middleton to the 2, Yanni to the 3, and Jabari to the 4. That could have an impact on Brogdon's minutes. So, yeah, these 2 seasons that he's had, and in particular this year and this little last run of the year, that could be maybe a peak in Brogdon's career. So that is something that you do have to pay attention to when you take a look at his value in dynasty leagues. But for now, he is a clear must-own player. The dud of the night. Marcin Gortat, he's still owned in 81% of leagues. 6 points, 10 rebounds with an assist, 2 of 7 from the field and 2 of 4 from the line. He is outside the top 200 over the last month. He's outside the top 160 over the season. He continues to suck. He hasn't hit 20 minutes in any of his last 3 games. And look, the rebounding, not too bad. An 8 rebound game, a 10 rebound game. There was a 2 rebound game in there. But over his last 7 games, he has acquired just 2 blocks, which is obviously piss poor. He has got double digits in scoring 3 times there. There is no place for him. He is being phased out. Now, Scott Brooks continually talks about, we need to change the lineup. Continually doesn't do it, but what we have seen is Gortat's minutes continually go down. So he is a guy that you shouldn't be really owning in any 10-team leagues, 12-team leagues. And honestly, he's a borderline 14-team league guy that in most 14-teamers, I reckon you can find better options than Marcin Gortat. I don't think it's suddenly turning around for a bloke who is now 34 years of age. I don't think that we're going to have this quick, massive turnaround or anything along those lines for the Polish Hammer, which is a shame because he does have one of the most legendary nicknames in the entire NBA. Let's go to question time. And someone said to me today, they sent me a question. Oh, yeah, I've been dying to ask this question. I wasn't sure if it was too trolly or non-basketball related. Mate, I want the non-basketball related questions. His question was about cricket. That's not what I'm going to do today, but maybe I'll get to it at some point. Break up the basketball stuff with it with a question. Yeah, throw the occasional basketball one in there, but I'm all about questions that aren't necessarily basketball related. Much like today's question from Ronald Coley on Twitter at Mirage5, and he says, what's your favorite fruit and vegetable? And have you tried roasted cauliflower? Absolutely, I've tried. Now, cauliflower was a fruit that I'm sure many of you hated when you were young. I wasn't a fan. I hated it, despised it. I was the same with broccoli. Yeah, got to love broccoli probably my early 20s. Cauliflower, a little bit later to the party, but into it now. Actually made cauliflower rice for the first time yesterday because my missus is doing a keto diet, so she can't have carbs. I thought, you know what? Well, if we're going to eat dinner together, I'll do the same thing. Bought a cauliflower, chopped it up, made that into rice. Not necessarily roasted cauliflower, but it was fine. Made a curry to go with it. Beautiful. But in terms of my favorite fruit and vegetable, Chinese broccoli is my favorite vegetable. Love that. I can just get a bunch of it, steam it, put some oyster sauce with garlic over the top, eat that. Love that. Favorite fruit, it's really boring, but bananas. I've been on plenty of like weird diets throughout my time. Not that I'm fat or anything, but sometimes I develop a little bit of a pot. You guys know all about that. And the easiest way for me to lose weight, I'll just eat bananas. That's it. Get my energy levels up, get my vitamin levels up, and just eat some bananas during the day instead of having a lunch. Have a couple of bananas and then I'm done for the day until dinner. Bananas are my favorite fruit. Chinese broccoli is my favorite vegetables, but I am big on pretty much, I'll eat any vegetable. I'm probably less interested in fruit. I hate stone fruits. Not interested in peaches or apricots or nectarines or plums or cherries, really. Don't like any of those. Not a massive fan of mangoes. Give me your apples. Give me dragon fruits. I like bananas, oranges, mandarins. Love citruses. Lime and lemon flavor is always good. But that's the current crown, I guess, for favorite fruit and vegetables. So thank you, Ronald, for that question. Just to break things up a little bit with the basketball talk during the show. All right, let's get into these games now, talk about them in a bit more detail. The first game, the Sacramento Kings and the Charlotte Hornets, and I'm sure you are stunned. You are absolutely, you cannot believe it, but the Kings changed their starting lineup. It's amazing that it happened. And in this era of youth, in this era of player development, they started Vince Carter and Kostas Koufos. Now, granted, Vincey only played 19 minutes and Koufos only played 17 minutes. But I'll tell you what's confusing to me is Carter would go 3-5 games in a row without playing. But in this new pattern of let's rest the veterans, he has played the last two games. So he's playing more now than he was before. If anyone can figure out the logic in that, send me an email. Do whatever. It doesn't make sense what this guy is doing. Consistently changing the starting lineup, changing the rotations. You want to develop the players, give them a set role and let them bloody do it. Now, I know you want to lose, but these guys aren't good enough that they're going to just be, just scraping together all these wins. Give them a set role. If you think that Labissiere is a sixth man, big man, keep him as a sixth man and play him 27 off the bench. But don't move him to a starting line for two games, bench him for two games. Hill comes in and out and that mucks up what De'Aaron Fox does as a starter. Give these guys consistent minutes. In fact, all these blokes that you're going to be resting every game or every second game, don't start any of them. Give your starting five room to develop as a group, and then you can rotate those veterans in. But no, Dave, you got to just muck everything up every single game. And it's really tough for us to know for DFS. At least this was the first game of the night for fantasy. But that's not why I'm complaining. Jaeger's a bad coach with bad ideas and bad systems. And I worry about what he's going to do to whoever the top one, top two, top three pick they get next season is. But we'll talk about Labissiere, who was good. 29 minutes, 23 and 4, hit a triple, shot the ball well. He is absolutely someone to get in a 12-team league now that he's recovered from that shoulder. It's going to be up and down. It's going to be flaky, but he can put up the good numbers. Budrick Hield, 27, 18 and 5, four triples with two assists, a strong night from him. Again, he's fine as a 12-team league guy, but I don't really see him as having this massive, massive upside. But he does have enough value where you can add him. But priority for him goes behind Foxy and Bogdan Bogdanovic. Bogdan had 10, 2 and 7. Foxy had 16, 3 and 7. So decent games there, while Bogdanovic didn't shoot that well. But if the efficiency was up, we would have been talking about him having a very similar line to what Fox had there. As for George Hill, he came back. He played 19 minutes, had 3 points with five assists. It's really tough to own him, to own Zebo, and you wouldn't be owning Koufos or Temple in any really standard leagues or anything close to a standard league. But with their minutes up and down, with their roles up and down. Randolph sat this one out, and as did Garrett Temple. They're just not going to play enough. Justin Jackson moved from starter back to the bench so that Vince Carter could start. He played 20 minutes and had 4 and 2, but he's really just a deep league, 20-team league guy. That's really about it. Well, Cauley Stein struggled efficiency-wise, 5 of 20 for 11 and 10 with 2 steals. But if he goes at 50% there, then you're talking about 21 and 10, and the line looks awesome, quite clearly. But the shot obviously was not falling for him at all. Let's move on to the Charlotte side of things. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was out with an axillary abscess, which means a boil under his arm, which would have been extraordinarily painful. Boils, you might go, what's that? They've hurt. I had one on the back of my neck that was like the size of a tennis ball, and it killed. I couldn't sleep for about 2 days, and then it burst open and pus went running down my back for about 3 hours straight. That was a lovely moment. Hopefully you aren't eating anything as I described that story. Kemba Walker, 26-6-9 with 5 triples, a steal and 2 blocks. He's been massive. Now, depending on if he does get traded, we don't know if he will. It is being talked about, and it doesn't make sense for the Hornets to move him. His value for most teams that would get him would remain the same. As for Kidd-Gilchrist, he was out. Trevion Graham started, 21 minutes, 3 points. He's been shooting the 3 ball really, really well this season, Graham. He's at over 40%, but he's not a guy that is going to have a ton of fantasy value. Marv Williams, 14-2 with 3 triples. While Jezza Lamb, with Kidd-Gilchrist out, had 18-5, 3 triples, a steal and a block. But the Kidd-Gilchrist injury, as painful as it might be, it's not a long-term thing. So Lamb then goes back to a 21 or 22-minute sort of role. 14-16 with 6 blocks for Dwight. He was always in a good spot against Sacramento, and it clearly panned out that way. While Malik Monk continues to struggle, 6 minutes without Kidd-Gilchrist playing, did not take a single shot. In fact, he had a 6 trillion, just a horrendous, horrendous game from Monk, and he has been bad this year. There is still hope for him, obviously, as a rookie, but it has not been good in any sort of way that you would describe the word good. It's been bad. The Utah Jazz, speaking of bad, they got smashed by the Hawks. Rocket Rodney Hood was out, so Jingle and Joe started, 28 minutes, 8-2-3. He is a borderline 12-team league guy at the moment. I still think that he can be owned in a lot of spots, but in some places it'll be better having a streaming spot than him. As for Rudy Gobert, 28 minutes here, 6-10, but the defense, 3 steals and 3 blocks, while Derek Favors only 27 minutes, 11-4, and I think his time as being a standard league guy is probably done. The Don Mitchell struggled, 13-6 on 13 shots, by far not his best night. Yeah, he's going to have some of these nights where he is a little bit out of control with the shooting, but he corrected that over that 6 to 8 week period, and I don't think we need to be too concerned. Well, Ravishing Rick was poor, 2 points on 8 shots. The 4 rebounds, 6 assists and a steal is not bad. And like Ingles, he is a borderline 12-team league guy. And in most cases, I wouldn't drop him, but I can understand why you would. And with Hood out, Alec Burks played 17 minutes in 23... Sorry, played 23 minutes and scored 17 points. But he's not someone who I'm going to be relying upon in any sort of fantasy league. For the Hawks, I got the obligatory halftime tweets. Torian Prince is terrible. Drop him. He ended up with 17 points in 25 minutes, had 3 assists and 3 steals with 2 triples and shot 55%. He is a guy that should be owned in all leagues. I've said it many times. I wasn't dropping him because of a 4-game slump. He is still a top 100 player. The finger, he said, was bothering him, and he only played 25 in this one due to some really early fouls. He is going to be fine for the rest of the year, I'm pretty confident. The front court rotation on this team just makes no sense. I don't know why we're getting 11 minutes of Luke Babbitt. I don't know why we're getting 10 minutes of Miles Plumlee as a starter. It just makes no sense. The Baptist had 8-7 in 21 minutes. I still think he should be owned, as should the Undertaker, who had 7-9. But holding on to both of them, that might be a struggle. So you might need to look at which one's going to suit what you do best, or if you could trade one of them away. But I do think they should be owned. Well, Ilyasova had 5-11. In his 25 minutes. It was a weird game where the minutes were spread out all over the place. The highest minute total for any player was Marco Bellinelli, who played 26 in this one. Let's move on to the next game. It is that double overtime game between the Bulls and the Pelicans. Lauri Markkanen had 14-17, a steal and 2 blocks, and continues to look really good and really self-assured out on the court. So I didn't expect him to be this good really at any point in the first couple of years of his career, so he's easily exceeded expectations. Robin Lopez had an inexplicable 22 points, and he took the most shots on the team. That is just really, really weird stuff to see that from Robin Lopez. He is not a must-own guy. Well, Denzel the Hammer Valentine played 38 minutes, 8 points with 5 assists and 2 steals. Weird to see him playing 38 minutes and David Nwaba playing 16 minutes. Shout out to Stacey King for being the Bulls announcer and still having no idea how to pronounce David Nwaba. How can you be so willfully ignorant in your own job for your own team and still get that job? It is just a testament to incompetency. And that is, I think that's the new Bulls logo or the new Bulls motto. And really embodied there by Stacey. As for Valentine, look, that's a nice line. There's production right across it there, but I don't think we're expecting that sort of role every night as we move forward. Justin Holiday, 15 and 7 in 42 minutes, is fine to own, but I do think he will lose a bit of playing time. Well, Zachy Levine, 19 and 5 in 24 minutes. Strong numbers. The 24 minutes is a season high, continues to push forward. There are going to be some struggles at times for him. And I think that 19, 5, and 2 is something that you could see from him on a semi-regular basis as a line that he puts up. Nick Mirotic had 14, 4, and 2, just the 25 minutes, but still a strong performance from him and still should be owned in standard leagues. Onto the pals. Tone Davis, I thought he'd go off, and he did. 34 and 9 with 5 assists, 2 steals, and a block is going off on 61% shooting. That's going off. It just, when your front court mate goes 44, 24, and 10, it looks pretty piddly in comparison. Rajon Rondo, horrible player. How's Rondo's revenge game in this one? Even I forgot to tweet that one out. Revenge game. 15 minutes for Rondo. 5 points with 2 assists and a triple. He is a bad, bad NBA player who has not been good for 5 seasons. Elvin Gentry, who I've given plenty of shit to for some of his coaching decisions, realizes it, and he's not playing him at point guard. Turns out that when you give $150 million to your starting point guard and then don't play him at point guard, it's generally not a good idea, and we're seeing Jrue Holiday move back to that position more because Rondo sucks. Now, Holiday wasn't at his best, but still had 12, 4, and 6 with 2 steals and 2 triples. And back to Rondo, he's not a 10-team league guy. I don't think he's a 12-team league. Look, he could go out there and drop 10 assists in 29 minutes in the next game. That's fine. But the pattern of things is they just can't rely upon him to play. And he's not going to be he'd need 31 minutes for me to go, you know what, lock this bloke in as a top 80 guy. And that's just not happening. Eats one more, strong game, 15, 5, and 3 with 4 triples, but he is more of a streamer than a must-own guy. Well, Darius Miller, one of the more reliable sources of 3-pointers that you can stream in at any point, get your 2 to 3 triples. He is one of those sort of guys. The next game we take a look at, the Miami Heat and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets get the 99-90 victory. No Tyler Johnson, no Goran Dragic in this one. And Hassan Whiteside, I thought it was a shit matchup for him against the Rockets. We know their 3-point shooting, Ryan Anderson switching, all that sort of stuff. I thought he might struggle. But he started off the game on fire and ended up with 30 minutes. 22 and 13 with 3 steals. But what we're seeing established, and I don't think that it's necessarily indicative of anything or predictive of anything, is when Whiteside gets more minutes, the Heat lose. And when Whiteside gets fewer minutes, the Heat win. It's going to be something to watch, but the last two games that he's played 30-plus minutes, they've lost. And those other games where he's been limited to 24 to 25, they've won. We'll see if that bears out. But the numbers are there for Whiteside. He puts them up. It's whether he can actually stay on the court in a winning environment that's going to determine what his value is. He's nowhere near drop zone or anything like that, but it's something to watch. Joshy Richardson didn't have the best night, but 12 and 3 with a steal and a block is okay. While the Duke dropped in his 3 triples in 39 minutes, and he is a guy to own in all leagues, I believe. Jimmy Johnson, a lot of people ready to drop him. I'm not. 10, 3, and 4 in 29. While Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk both saw under 20 minutes and they aren't 12-team league guys, but there'll be the occasional big Olynyk game when Whiteside gets limited and Bam might even throw one in there, but they are more 14 for Olynyk and 16-team league guys for Adebayo. Better quickly talk about Derek Jones Jr., who started. He is one of the worst fantasy players out there. He played 30 minutes. He did have 3 blocks, so that inflates his value, but 6 points and 5 rebounds, and he is just a 20-team league guy that when Johnson and Dragic are back, he probably won't be in the rotation at all. Onto the Rockets, Mike D'Antoni just loves throwing the misdirection. Oh, yeah, I'm probably going to try to run the 10-man rotation. Like, Mick, you never run a 10-man rotation, ever. And yeah, that's. I was having discussions with people on Basketball Monster on the Gerald Green discussion because I'd zeroed him out for the Rockets. He's not going to play. And they go, oh, no, I think he's going to play. I think the D'Antoni low rotation is overblown. It's not going to be a problem. They'll fit 4 screen into the rotation. And my brain's going, I don't think Gerald Green's that good to actually push himself into the rotation, which means taking minutes away from Tucker, from Marmute, from Ariza, from Gordon, from Paul, from Harden, all those guys are in front of him. But then when D'Antoni comes out there, we're going to run a 10-man rotation. Went, all right, so maybe they're going to give 7 minutes to Gerard Green. Nah, we're not going to do that. They just ran with that 9-man rotation. Now, in some of the games coming up, the Rockets have got some easier opponents, so maybe we do see Green get back in and play, you know, single digits in minutes. But if you're hoping for any sort of 12-team league value, forget it. 14 teams, no chance. 16 teams, maybe. 18 teams, ugh. Yeah, maybe, but that, look, even that, I think it's stretching it. We have to remember the players ahead of him: Harden, Paul, Tucker, Ariza, Gordon, Marmute. He's not getting minutes ahead of any of those guys. And in order for him to scrounge 10 minutes, you've got to take 10 minutes away from them. And this is a game where Jim Harden and Chris Paul only played 35 minutes each, when they could very easily be getting 37 or 38. Harden, he's back in business, 28, 2 and 5. Had 2 blocks, 2 steals, and 5 dribbles. And his defensive numbers have been through the roof since returning from his hamstring. Chrissy Paul had 16, 6, and 6 with 3 steals. PJ Tucker played 24. Marmute played 22, but didn't do enough to really trouble us for fantasy. While Ryan Anderson hit 3 triples, but he should be relegated to that zone of 3-point streaming guy like Darius Miller, but still owned in way too many leagues. It was also a shit performance from Trevor Ariza as he came back from suspension, just 3 and 5 with 2 steals, while Eric Gordon had 16 in his 30 minutes. Expect Gordon's numbers to drop quite significantly as the season progresses. The Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks. Jay Triano. Now, yeah, we're going to make a change to the starting lineup. All right, thanks, Jay. Did it. Tyson, we're going to start Greg Monroe at center. All right, so what does that mean? Does that mean that Chandler's not starting at all for the rest of the season? Does that mean that it's just the one game? Now, this is the thing. Triano decided, I think in large part, to start Monroe in this game because it was against his former team, which is just the most nonsense form of coaching that I could ever think of. Greg, we're not going to play you at all.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
But because we're not respecting you as a professional, we think the only time that you can go out there is so you can get petty revenge against the team that traded you. Or sorry, against the team that paid you $70 million. Because I know you've got a massive axe to grind for them giving you all this money. So we're going to give you a chance to go out there and really show them. It's just bullshit coaching. It's just ridiculous. Now, if you have got an expendable roster spot, Greg Monroe in 30 minutes a night is a clear Mustang guy, and there's going to be no other top 100, top 70 type guys out there. But the chances are that it's not, that it's a stupid one-game move, and then he goes back to rotting on the bench until their next back-to-back in 3 weeks' time. I don't know which one it's going to be. I hope it means they're going to just run Monroe out there and see what happens. But again, with trade deadline 2 weeks away, maybe they move Monroe, maybe they buy him out. I'm not too confident of those two things. But I get, just with some of the things that Triano has done before, there's a real possibility that the only reason he started him is so he could go out there and revenge against his former team, like he's got some massive axe to grind against this team that paid him all this money. And yeah, they didn't play him the desired role, but I don't know. It's a weird one. Have a look if you've got an expendable guy. Like, if your worst guy is Malcolm Brogdon, you keep on to holding on to Malcolm Brogdon. If you've got Dragan Bender, then you get rid of him and you grab Monroe and you see what happens. It really is a dependent situation. Devin Booker, the shot was just not good. 2 of 14. At least he went to the line 9 times and hit all of those for 14, 4 and 8 with 3 assists. While Jared Dudley, with the weird 9 assist game in 17 minutes, he likely won't be in the rotation whenever Marquese Chris returns. Joshy Jackson got a lot of fouls, 4 fouls in 11 minutes, so that limited him, while Tyler Ulis only played 15 minutes, while Isaiah Cannon got 28, and I don't care because I don't want to own either of those guys in 12-team leagues, maybe in 16-team leagues, but probably not even 14-teamers. Well, Dragan Bender, I love Dragan Bender as a player, I think he can be good. He is not a good fantasy contributor at all. TJ Warren was back, he had 23 in his 34 minutes. Onto the Bucks. Talked about Brogo already. Chrissy Middleton with a second strong game without Yanni. 35, 6 and 3 with 2 triples, while Bledsoe in his revenge against his former team, 19, 3 and 7 with 4 steals and a block. That's a pretty standard line from Bled. While Johnny Henson, the Muppet, had 10 and 6 with 3 steals and a block. I think that Henson should be owned in all leagues. I've been saying that for months since the Monroe trade. And I think you need to do it. I think you need to go and grab him. Sterling Brown started in place of Yanni. I like Brown, but he's not going to be a 12-team league guy. He's probably not going to be a 18-team league guy. But I feel relatively confident in saying he has found himself a consistent spot in the rotation. He played 27 here, and Tone Snell played 21. Now, Snell did have an issue where he had to leave the court with a head injury during the game, but he is just not a good player. He had flashes of it last season, but he is not that good, and I think that Brown is a better player than him. Let's see exactly what this new coaching arrangement does for Brown and Snell's minutes. Also, always great when you can get 8 minutes of Marshall Plumlee. That is, that's the worst of the Plumlee brothers, and that is a, it's a low bar. A lot of people went, man, do I go grab Thon McKerr now that Jason Kidd's gone? Like, no, not really. No, nothing really excites me here about McKerr at all in this situation. In fact, he played fewer minutes in this game with Kidd gone than what he did previously. So I'm not overly excited about McKerr as a fantasy prospect for this season. The next game we take a look at, the Philadelphia 76ers, just a horrible loss for Philly against the Grizzlies. Šarić had 22 and 10 with 3 triples in 35 minutes. Well, Ben Simmons struggled. 6 points, still had the 7 assists, but his play has dropped over the last week or two. Joel Embiid's efficiency was in the absolute shithouse. 15 and 14 in 32 minutes, but poor efficiency, obviously. He will be better than that as we move forward. Well, Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot, he got hot early. 20 points with 6 triples, 2 assists and a block. I think that the March-April that Luwawu-Cabarrot had last season is probably going to be the best stretch of his career, and he is getting these minutes because Fultz, Bayless, and Redick are all out, and when those guys return, then he's going to go back to playing very little. And I like Luwawu-Cabarrot. I think he can be a decent player. I just think he's going to be pretty much trapped on this Sixers team for the next couple of seasons and not be able to really fulfill any level of potential, and he's actually regressed a little bit this year as well. I don't know what the hell to make of the Grizzlies' box score. There was no Chandler Parsons, no Jermichael Green, no Mike Conley, no Jim Ennis. So we had a guy called Mike Henry. Yes, and that's Mike with a Y. He had 16 minutes, 12, 2, and 2 with 4 steals and 3 triples. If you're in a 30-team league, hey, go and have a look, see how it goes, because we don't know how long that Ennis and Chandler Parsons are going to be out, and they need that wing help. He's actually better than Ben McLemore, which is a weird thing to say. Jarrell Martin started over Jermichael Green. If they played equal minutes, I would want Martin over Green for fantasy. He had 12 and 8 in 32 minutes with 2 steals, but when Jermichael returns, Martin will go back to a 20-minute role, relegating him to the deeper league zone. Dylan Brooks, who'd been playing quite well, he only scored 7 in 29 minutes and not really going to be a 12-teamer. Well, Deontay Davis, I thought he'd play a little bit more here. 5 points in only 12 minutes for Deontay. Wayne Seldon got ejected. 14 minutes in total. So he looked like he was on a way to a decent total, maybe a 20-minuter. Not really going to be a 12-team league guy, I think. He's definitely not a stash sort of a guy. I know the competition in front of him is not great, but when you have Ennis, Parsons, and eventually Conley return, then he's going to be further squeezed for minutes. But for now, he's an interesting deeper league sort of a grab. I grabbed him in a 30-team league. I think you could grab him in an 18-team league and see exactly what happens. Marc Gasol, 19 and 6, while Tyreek had 18, 4 and 8, just going about their business pretty quietly there. The Washington Wizards, just an abysmal performance, spanked by the Mavericks for the second time this season. Johnny Wall got into it with JJ Barea, caught him a little midget. Barea fired back later on by saying, well, you know, finally I've got someone in the NBA that I don't like, and I think his teammates don't like him either. So just more NBA bullshit going on. Wall had 11, 3, and 5 with 2 blocks, but really just a shit performance from this Wizards team. Yeah, Scott Brooks keeps mentioning, oh, we're going to make changes. The main change, I guess, we've seen is Kelly Oubre getting more minutes, 32 minutes, 7 and 5 with 2 steals. I think he's a fine add in 12-team leagues, especially with Otto Porter going out with a hip injury again. This has bothered him for his entire career. The last 2 years, he's barely missed any time with it, but he consistently seems to leave games early and then be questionable and then play, but it's always the hip. Every time Otto Porter's in trouble, it's always the hip. I love Otto Porter as a player. I think he's good, and I've been a fan of his since he was drafted, but I don't think he's as good in fantasy as what people make out, and I think that a second half slump could really be coming, as I mentioned in the player spotlight the other day. Bradley Beal had 18 points. The free throws are just a real problem for him. There's not much you can do about it. Maybe we've got to lump him in with Westbrook and Wiggins, that he's just all of a sudden forgotten how to shoot free throws. This was obviously a piss-poor performance, going 7 of 12 from the line. He's not going to be that bad on most nights, but it's a clearly troubling issue, and only at 74% over the last 2 weeks, which is a negative for a guy that should be a decent positive in that area. But last season was the only year of his career that he'd been over 80%. So don't look at it as going, man, Bradley Beal's such a good shooter. Why isn't he 90%? Because he's never really been that guy. This was a bad performance, and he's been a little bit down, but not as much as we might expect. Tomas Satoransky had the bad Richie Beno, 2 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. But if Porter misses, his minutes go up to 25 to 26 as he backs up the 1 and the 3, and then he can be looked at in maybe your 16-team leagues. Markieff had 5 and 8 in 26 minutes and not a standard league guy. On to the Mavericks, my boy Dennis Smith, 17, 3 and 6, 2 steals, 2 triples. He's good, he's going to be good, he's going to be better, and he will be a top 20 player at some point in the next 5 seasons. The Pencil had 20 and 10, a nice bounce back with a triple one from him, while Wizzy Matthews had 14 points. They didn't start Yogi Ferrell, they started Maxi Kleber, which is not a move I necessarily agreed with, but Ferrell still got his 31 and had 14 and 5. Now, Ferrell's a guy that if I owned him in a standard league, I'd be comfortable dropping him to grab Greg Munro just to see what happens, because Munro's got a way higher upside, and if I lose out on Ferrell, oh well, I'll just get someone else. Like, he's not that guy that I need to really lock down and hold on to. Not much else really mentioning there. Kyle Collinsworth's 10-day contract expired, but he did get it renewed for a second 10-day. But that's, if you're in 85-team fantasy leagues, you might be paying some attention to that. The Portland Trailblazers and the Denver Nuggets, Yusuf Nurkic against his former team, 27 minutes, 19 and 12, 2 steals, 3 blocks. In general, he plays pretty well against the Nuggets, but yeah, his form recently has been on the up as well. So this is gives you some hope for a decent high upside second half of the year. Lillard had 25, 2 and 8, while CJ McCollum, not his best game, 12, 2 and 4. Shabazz Napier, who is going to be the topic of today's player spotlight, 22 minutes with 7 points and 2 steals, but I'll talk about him a little bit more later. While our mate, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He was shit. 8 and 6 in 28 minutes on 2 of 10 shooting. This is what he does. He's just as likely to come out and hit 5 triples in the next game. He is a borderline 12-team league guy without being a must-own. The Blue Arrow, 38, 5 and 6, 4 triples, 74% shooting. The amount of dickery that was going on with his minutes early in the season was an embarrassment. He has hopefully locked that down now. And again, one of those guys that I preached so much patience with. And this is why, because this is what he can do. He was awesome. But Dr. Malone, just unbelievable stupidity. Goes back to the Mason Plumlee and Nikola Jokic front court. Now, they got the win. But you don't need to throw Mason Plumlee in there because you've got to really battle against the Al-Farouq Aminu, Yusuf Nurkic front court. No, you don't. That you don't. You don't. Look, you don't. You just don't have to. Yeah, Plumlee was all right. 11, 7, and 5, a steal and 2 blocks. But for all this talk, Malone comes out, we've got to play Jokic, you know, always at center, predominantly at center. We've got to go back to what we did last season. We've got to go back to me not calling plays and letting the offense freewheel. And then you run this bullshit, like, What is it? Now, and the other thing that comes out of this, and again, I'm going to rant against stupidity because I hate it. Your offense was the second best in the NBA after Nikola Jokic was inserted as a starter because you let him run things. You let him organize it. You didn't stand there calling, oh, run horns, mate. Like, let him run it. Let him do what he needs to do and set things up. But then you come in this season and go, okay, I got Paul Millsap. Let's change everything we did last season and let me run all the stuff. This is Malone. Like, I've seen what's worked. I know what's worked. We've seen what's worked. All right, boys, we know what worked last year. Let's just do the opposite. All right, that's it. Let's do the opposite. That's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to try and be as bad as possible in comparison to last season. What thought process is this? And then you go out there. We've got to play Jokic at the 5. We've got to play Jokic at the 5. And here's our starters, Jokic at the 4. What is going on? Frustrating. Baby Neck moved to the bench. He had 6 and 5. Got some defensive numbers. 2 steals and 3 blocks, but not really a threat in any 12 or probably even 14 team leagues. While Fart and Will Barton, Jesus, he's inconsistent. 0-7 from the field. Had 7 points, though, and hit the game ceiling last 4 free throws. 2 assists and a steal. I would still own him, but I'm still not convinced that he's a good player. He has stretches where I go, oh, maybe I'm wrong. And then I go, no, you know what? I'm not. He is just infuriating. He's out of control. He is selfish at times. I don't know what to make of this guy. My opinion on him changes all the time. Gaz Harris was inefficient, and we had 11 minutes of Manny Moutier, because why not? Trey Lyles also had some defensive numbers, 2 steals and 2 blocks in his 24 minutes, but if he's going to stay in a 24-minute bench role, then there's no reason you want him in a 12-team league, and he's another guy. If he's on my roster, I'll piss him off to grab Munro just to see what goes on, to grab a Labissiere or something like that. If I had to choose between Munro and Labissiere, I guess if I'm sitting at the top of the standings, I'd be okay taking Munro, because then if I get that and it works out, then I almost become unbeatable. But if I'm pushing it like third or fourth and I just need some, I can't make any missteps and I don't want to take that risk. I want some steadiness. I'd take Labissiere. Now, some people might look at it the other way. You've got to swing for the fences. But if you're in that playoff push zone, I want a bit of consistency. I don't want to necessarily take that risk, especially when there's an option that could push me one or two spots up. Whereas if I take Munro and wait on it for 2 weeks and someone else grabs Labissiere, then I'm done. I'd rather push into the playoffs and get that consistency going. I reckon that just about does it for all the action from Monday. Again, that Minnesota Clippers game is still going. There is no Jim Butler in that game. Lou Williams moved to the bench because Jawan Evans was out to run that backup. His minutes will still be fine. I'll go and have a look as we go to break and see if anything major has gone down in that game, and I'll let you know. There, we're going to come back with that player spotlight on Shabazz Napier, and we're going to preview DFS for Tuesday, and there are five games on. I am going to give you a song today by Big School. It's called No Money. Now, I know some people watching on YouTube around this time of the show, it seems like for some reason my audio starts again from the start of the show. I have absolutely no idea why that happens. My hard copy of the video is perfectly fine. The video is fine. It's some sort of issue either in uploading that something happens on YouTube, or for some of these bands, YouTube puts a copyright notice on it. So I try and remove the song, and maybe that's what's going on. So I'm going to try not to do that today and let me know if there's any audio issues. But it's becoming frustrating because, again, my video is clean. The copy I've got here, there's no audio repetition. It's something that happens in the upload process later on in the day, and it screws up the audio. So hopefully it doesn't happen. We're going to be looking at, I think I said No Money from Big School. We'll play that song now, then back to talk some DFS. We're back. Let's look at the player spotlight. Let's shine it brightly up in Portland on Shabazz Napier, who's been requested multiple times. I know Dennis Hickson, a big fan of the show for a long time, a Portland native, has been just pounding the mentions with Shabazz Napier. So Dennis, you can stop with the Shabazz Napier request now, because here it is. Shabazz Napier is a player who now is in his fourth season in the NBA, meaning he's going to be a restricted free agent at the end of this season. But I think one thing we have to remember, he is going to be 27 years old in the offseason. This is not a young player at all. 27. We're talking about by the time next season starts, he's 27. Smack bang in the middle of his prime. This is by far his best season. Even on a per 36 minute basis, he is performing exceptionally well in comparison to what he's done in last season. But where's the big improvements? Well, let's have a look what he's done so far. 21 minutes a game, 10 points, 2.5 rebounds, 2.3 assists on 1.3 steals, shooting 48 and 84%. I'm sure you can tell that 48% is what's really elevating his numbers, including 43% from three. He was at 36, 33, and 36 in his first three NBA seasons shooting from three. He's taking his true shooting from below league average at 52, 46, and 53 up to 59% this season. But I think what people will do is they can go look at his Basketball Monster page and look at the last month and go, shit, he's the 67th ranked player in the last month. But we have to remember that includes that big stretch of time that Damian Lillard missed over the Christmas period, where he averaged 13, 3.5, and 3.5 with 1.5 threes and steals on still on that elite efficiency. But with Lillard back, he's moved into a bench role and a lower minute role. And you can have a look at these last four games and go, well, he's still the 100th ranked player in that time, Josh, playing 22 minutes a game. But the reason his value is there is because he is getting still 1.5 steals per game. And as I've mentioned plenty of times, when looking at ranking metrics, towards the back end of the rankings in standard leagues, that's 70 or 65 through 150, a big rise in steals gives you a 30-40 spot bump in the rankings. And that's exactly what's happening to Napier here. It's his only positive category apart from marginal positives in free throws, and basically break even in three-pointers over that time period. It's the steals that's really pushing him up and giving him a significant chunk of value. So if you don't need the steals, then he is a hard one to rely upon. And steals can be a little bit inconsistent. Now, he's been getting two steals in tons of games, almost 50% of his games over the last couple of weeks. But he's not a guy that I look at and go, you know what, he is a must-own guy. He's an interesting threes and steals streamer. He's a 14 to 16, he's probably a 16-team must-own guy, maybe a 14-team league sort of a guy, probably a 14-team league guy that I would own. But I don't think that he can maintain 12-team league value unless an injury or a trade. Now, that was interesting yesterday. Mike Rice from Portland tweeted out, this is what he said, it was very deliberate. That's why CJ will be traded, to get an elite big man. Or that's a paraphrase. Like, he didn't say, you know, if they trade, CJ will be for a big man, or that's why CJ could be traded. He said, that's why CJ will be traded. Like, just matter-of-factly threw it out there that McCollum is going to get traded, which I found absolutely astonishing. And maybe he didn't mean as a definite, but the way he wrote it, it was a definite that McCollum is getting traded. I could not believe that. And if that was the case, then we would see way more Napier and it would be interesting. But again, he is a restricted free agent. And at 27 years of age, can he find himself a starting job in the NBA? I'd be pretty stunned if any team signed him to become their starter. Maybe the Indiana Pacers with Daz Collison and Corey Joseph. They could be looking at someone like Napier. Maybe he could be an upgrade on those guys. Marginal upgrade, but he could be in play there. Yeah, what other teams really is there a situation for him to move into? Yeah, the Kings have got a young guy, the Knicks have got a young guy. Like, where does he move in and automatically become a starter? He has looked good in his times and his efficiency has been absolutely sensational. And he's been a guy who's been a real positive in terms of on-off stuff. Plus 5.4 this year. He was a 2.4 last year. And a lot of his indicators are saying, you know, this guy can be a valuable player. A PER of 18, a true shooting of 60, a box score plus minus for 2.3 this season in his fourth season. Huge, huge steps forward, which makes you think that he can have some value. Would he be an upgrade, say, on an Alfred Payton in Orlando? And I'm an Alfred Payton fan. Look, maybe. His ability to shoot threes, I think that having him as a starter over a Payton, maybe that would work. But a lot of his indicators this season are, you know, predicting an ability to be a useful sort of a player. But again, we do have to remember, he is 27, or he is going to be 27 years of age by the time next season starts. But everything that we've seen from him this year, the big turnaround in the fourth year, now if this was like his seventh year, I'd say, well, maybe there's an element of fluke involved. In your fourth year, that's something that does happen quite a bit. The big turnaround in your advanced metrics, in your shooting efficiency, in your on-off numbers, all that stuff is a real positive for Shabazz. And you can go look at his stuff over on Cleaning the Glass as well. And I think one thing that's important to look at too is the fact that not only has he increased his efficiency by so much, but he's done it by creating his own shot a lot more as well, as his percentage of shots assisted has moved from 18% down to under 16%. So he's creating more of his own shots and doing it overall at a higher percentage. His shots created per shot, his points created per shot attempt is well up as well, and he's doing it on just about average efficiency. So his amount of assisted shots has dropped, especially like his ability to get to the rim. Last year, on all his shots at the rim, he was assisted 27% of the time. This year, he's down at 20%, meaning he is getting the ball, he is more aggressive, and he's getting to the rim, and he's doing it well, and he's getting there. And he's finishing those shots. So these are all positive signs for Napier. The thing I do worry about is the age and just where the opening is. There's maybe two teams. I'm trying to think off the top of my head what teams could he go to that would really work out for him and be like a 3 to 4 year starting point guard. There really aren't. Maybe it's Orlando. Maybe that's the team that you look at and go, well, yeah, maybe that's let's have a look actually. Let me go through all the teams and see if I can find a team who, for next season, you know, Shabazz Napier could be a solid start. The Pacers, perhaps, is an option. Detroit Pistons over Reggie Jackson. Could he be better than Reggie? Well, his shooting could be better, so that's, a possibility there for him as well. Charlotte, if Kemba Walker leaves, would be definitely a spot for him to go to there. Utah Jazz, is he an upgrade over Ricky Rubio? Yeah, maybe. There is a distinct possibility, even though they are about the same age. San Antonio, now they've gone to DeJounte Murray, but they probably aren't going to invest going in that way. And Phoenix is the other one. Phoenix is a pretty clear one. If they signed him, restricted free agency, or able to acquire him somehow, then he'd be a very clear upgrade over Tyler Ulis and Isaiah Cannon. So there are a few opportunities. So he's an interesting guy to look at, but I would say as his value falls over the next couple of weeks, might be a dynasty acquisition time. Just remembering though, the finding the right spot for him to be effective might be a little bit of a challenge. All right, let's go on and talk about these games now for Tuesday. Not doing the perfect lineup because that last game hasn't finished just yet. Let's move on to talking about Tuesday's action in the first game. It involves my mates, the Sacramento Kings, taking on the Orlando Magic. We don't know what's happening with this Kings rotation. Will Garrett Temple and Zach Randolph be back? Probably. Will Vince Carter play? Probably not. What about George Hill? Is he in? Is Kostas Koufos in? Which one of those guys is going to rest as well? Did both of them rest? Is the starting lineup going to change? Pretty much put $100 on that and be pretty happy getting the result back with that one. For Orlando, no injury concerns for us to look at. At point guard, Lord Alfred Payton, 7,100. I like him for a 30-point floor type of situation here, which at 7,100 is not exactly where you want to go, but I think on a 5-game slate, I feel a level of confidence in him that others may not have, and maybe, again, maybe I'm just too much of a fan of him. De'Aaron Fox at 5,700, I actually don't mind that. If we hear that George Hill is out, I'm way more onto that for Fox. Otherwise, he's more of a tournament guy. So that's an up in the air. But again, it's the first game of the night. But not that we're going to hear necessarily that Hill is in or out. But if they announce Hill is starting, then I'm definitely off Fox. But if he's on the bench, then he becomes a more interesting guy. Evan Fournier is at 6,300. I like the matchup for him. Again, lack of options makes him an okay cash play, while Budrick's at 5,700. His numbers have been strong lately, 26 average over the last three, 25 over the last five, which is not bad at that price. I still don't feel super strong, even though the matchup for him is really, really positive. So that could be something that you look at. Bogdan Bogdanovic at 6,600. I think he's a decent cash play after a poor shooting performance today. At small forward, Hezonja at 3,900 has been okay. I think more of a tournament guy than anything. Well, Johnny Simmons at 5,300. He played just 26 minutes in the last game. I'm not a big fan of his. You can use him, but he wouldn't be a guy that I'd be interested in. At power forward, Kem Birch, or as the guys over on Basketball Monster are calling him, Kem Bede. Yes, he's been pretty good lately. 23 points in 17 minutes in the last game, but that's a $4,600 price tag that sits on his head now, so there's no way that I'm interested in that in a cash game. But with Biombo not being that good, with the Magic trying some things out, and with a really positive matchup in the tournament, absolutely. If he's got that 30-point upside, I'm interested. Well, as Gordon's at 8,500, that is just an extraordinary price bump for a guy who's struggling, but the matchup sucks you in. Definitely not a cash situation. Scales at 5,400. I feel all right about using Labissiere at that price, but we do have to remember that Zebo will be back for this game, and that could eat into what Labissiere does. So if you're going to lean one way, it's probably tournament rather than cash. At center, Cauley Stein, 7,200. I'm in on that. He struggled with the shot today, but I'm back there. While Bismack at 6,600. That is strongly fade territory. Over on DraftKings for this one. For tournaments, I think Birch at 3,700 is in a much more favorable spot than what he is on FanDuel. I'm really interested there. De'Aaron Fox at 52 for those same reasons that I mentioned, more tournament. While Labissiere at 44, that's really hard to go past. I think that's a good one. Azza Gordon's at 81 and Lord Alfred's at 6,900. Both of those guys for GPP.
Giggity!
Thanks, Quagmire. For cash, I like a lot here. 6,100 for Fournier. Cauley Stein at 6,600, I think he's in a real strong spot. And I love Bud Hield on DraftKings. 4,700 for cash. I think there's almost zero chance that he doesn't give you value back at that price. Same with Bogdan at 5,500. I could lock those both guys in there and spend under 10,000 and feel like I'm going to get over 60 points and feel a decent level of confidence in those two guys. I really like both of them for cash over on DraftKings. Let's have a look at the next game now. It's the Nets. It's the Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 10, and the total is 214 points here. At point guard, Russell Westbrook is at 12,200, but point guards against the Nets. If you're ever going to spend the 12,000 up, assuming you can find the right guys to fit around him, this is it for us. This has got 65 written all over it. Great matchup, good opportunity. Love Russ here. On the other side, Spencer Dinwiddie's at 6,200. D'Angelo Russell's not doing anything at the moment, still easing his way back. So I think 6,200 is not a bad cash option for Spencer. We're not looking at D'Angelo or Fatface Ray Felton. At shooting guard, Caris LeVert at 5,400 has been a little bit off his game lately. The last time he played the Thunder, he was very, very active with 43 points. He's more of a tournament guy than a cash guy, while Robertson at 4,800. The numbers have been okay for him, gets those defensive stuff, but his upside is pretty limited, so he's probably a guy I would fade. Russell's at 47, not interested in that. Small forward, Paulie George, 8,000. Yep, I'm in on Paul George here. Cash and tournaments in a strong spot, while the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, at 46. And Damari Carroll, he's been a guy you could smash recently, but at 6,200, that's moving into fade territory there at that price. At power forward, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's at 6,800. Not the greatest position for him, but he has shown an ability to put up some weirdly large lines, so he is a tournament option, but not a strong cash guy, while Mallow's at 7,200. Mallow, averaging 41 over the last three, really turning it up a bit. The matchup is a positive one for him. I'm not ready to say he's a cash guy. There are other guys I like more, but there's some value. And we know centers against the Nets is a great spot. So Steve Adams, even though he's at 7,500, a 40 per burger, a 45, his season high is 47. Yeah, getting it past that is not out of the question here for Steve-O. Great matchup for him, so I really like it. If you're going to be playing the matchups, that's the one you want to go for. Whereas Jarrett Allen, Tyler Zeller, Jahlil Okafor, terrible matchup for those guys and players who aren't really that good anyway. On DraftKings, there's a bunch of guys I like for cash here. Russ is at 11.8. Steve-O Adams is at 6.8, which is great. Paulie George at 7.6 and Spencer Dinwiddie at 5.9. I like all of those guys and the other stuff. Damari's probably a little bit too high. Hollis Jefferson's a tournament guy. And Mallow at 66. There is some interest there in Carmelo Anthony at that sort of a price. Let's go on to the next one. It's the Cavs, the falling apart Cavs, and the San Antonio Spurs. Pau Gasol is out for San Antonio. Manu Ginobili is out for San Antonio. It is the start of a back-to-back, so I've slapped the questionable tag on Tony Parker. I don't know if he's going to play in this one, especially if they're targeting Manu's return for Wednesday. Then Tone could play this one. He could sit out Wednesday. I just don't know. He is the backup point guard now with DeJounte Murray starting, but there's a chance that Murray's minutes get bumped even further if Parker sits this one out, but we don't know yet. I would say if I had to lean one way that Tone would play in this one and potentially sit Wednesday, but we don't know that. At point guard, DeJounte Murray's at 4,800. He had 30 in that first start or first time in the Murray starting era, I guess. He's absolutely worth a look. His ability to get defensive numbers, rebounds, steals, and blocks, while being a poor shooter, does give him a significant amount of fantasy upside. So I like that. While Isaiah Thomas at 6,500, I like the price there. He has struggled a little bit, but I'm okay with using Isaiah in cash at that really depressed price. Pat Mills at 42 is a GPP guy, but that's really about it. I think, well, we're not going to be interested in Tone Parker. At shooting guard, Bryn Forbes at 3,500. There is a chance that he gets the start. They start Aldridge at the five, perhaps. Move Kyle Anderson to the four, and maybe they start Forbesy. Definitely only looking him at GPP, and mainly because playing against the Cavs, guards have an opportunity to go off, and weird performances have ensued all season. So minimum salary for Forbesy, especially if he gets the start, I'm interested in him. Dan Green's at 46, just way too flaky to consider in any sort of cash game, maybe a tournament, that's it. JR, the Plumber Smith, Dwayne Wade, not much interest there. Although Wadey at 4,200, there is a little bit of upside if they play him some extended minutes. Small forward, Kyle Anderson, 6,200, really just a pretty good cash play, a good opportunity here for him to get you the 29 to 33 sort of point mark, 45 in the last one, but that's a significant price rise, so bear that in mind. Well, LeBron at 11,000. Has struggled in the past against the Spurs. Mainly that's the Kawhi factor. That's obviously not an issue here. I feel okay about rolling LeBron out. At power forward, Aldridge at 9,500 has really shit the bed against Cleveland in his past three matchup, which is a 31-point average. That is too high a price for me to get interested in LaMarcus, while Davis Bertans at 36 would be tournaments only. And Jay Crowder and Jeff Green for the Cavs.
My name is Jeff.
Really hard to get excited there either. At center, good old Kevin Love. Is he back from his illness? Yes, he is fine. $7,000 for Lovey. Tournament guy here. I hate the matchup. Spurs just really limit what opposition players can do all the time, so he is a tough guy to look at. While Laverne or Tristan Thompson as your low salary centers, really hard to have any sort of excitement about those guys. On DraftKings, GPP, Forbesy again, Bryn Forbes. And for cash, it's DeJounte at 4,600, super cheap there. Kyle Anderson at 56 is strong. And Isaiah at 6,000 has value there. LeBron at 10.8 is pretty good also. LaMarcus at 87 comes more into the picture, but still not one that I'm super interested in over on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next game. It is the Knicks up against the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are favored by 14, the highest spread of the day, and the total of 227 is the highest. Also, Andre Iguodala missed the last game. He's been upgraded to probable with his calf contusion. At point guard, Steph is at 9,600. We know Steph has a history of lighting up the Knicks. I think that's a great play to use Steph there. Jarrett Jack at 4,800. I think Jack at 48 is a good tournament play. I don't trust Hornacek's rotations to use him in cash, though, and Frankie Ntilikina is at minimum salary because he's just not getting the playing time to have any sort of an impact. That shooting guard, Courtney Lee's at 4,900. With Timmy Hardaway back, I'm not feeling super great there, while Clay's at 6,800. Sure, in a tournament, but I don't even think his upside's high enough for... Well, that's not true. He just hasn't had really the real huge game this year. I'm not interested in him in DFS. Timmy Hardaway at 5,500. The minutes are still a little bit limited, but I feel not too bad at that price that you could use him in cash. He's not a number one priority, but he has something there. Well, small forward at Durant, 10-5. I'd prefer him over LeBron, to be honest. I think that's he's 500 bucks cheaper, and he's in a more favorable environment. Mick Beasley at 4,800. Yeah, that's definitely a fade to me. Omri Caspi, Lance Thomas, no interest. Power forward, Draymond, 8,300. At 8,000, I'd be in on Draymond. 8,300, I think there are going to be better options out there. More of a tournament guy than anything. While Porzingis at 8,700, Draymond has bothered him significantly, so he is a strong, strong fade. Maybe he can reverse it in a tournament, but there is no way that I want him in cash. At center, Cock at 3,700, and I base this on the fact that Enes Kanter has had troubles against the Warriors. He's had troubles with his minutes. His last three games, he's averaged 19 minutes, and he gets played off the court, and they have to get their Cock out for 22, 23 minutes, and at 3,700, he can easily get 25 points. In fact, Cock has had a 50-point game this season, amazingly, so he is an interesting, very interesting tournament sort of a guy if, in fact, they can't end up playing Kanter. Kanter is a strong fade, obviously. On DraftKings, I love Durant at 10-5. Curry at 10-5 loses the luster that he has on FanDuel. Not too interested. Fading Kristaps, fading Draymond, fading Clay. Timmy Hardaway at 6-7 is probably a little bit too high. This is not a game to really attack as much on DraftKings, despite the higher total. Everyone's prices seem to be a little bit too high in most cases. The last game of the night, we have got the Boston Celtics taking on the Los Angeles Lakers. The Celtics are favored by 4. The total is 208.5. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is questionable, while Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma are probable, and Lonzo Ball is out. We could have an Alex Caruso starting situation. At the very least, I think he plays more minutes than Tyler Ennis, and he could be an option there. He's priced at 4,200 at a shooting guard. He had 32 in the last game. He's absolutely worth a squeeze as a GPP guy. Let's look at the other point guards. So Kyrie's at 8,500. I feel pretty good about that. That's a nice cash play. While Rozier at 38 is only for tournaments, in my opinion. Shooting guard Marcus Smart, 5,100, has not been good lately, but this is a positive opportunity. More of a tournament guy than a cash guy. Caldwell Pope, I wouldn't be wanting to use him with his situation. Well, 7,000 Jordan Clarkson's at now. I know he's been going off the last two games. If Caldwell Pope plays, I want nothing to do with that. And if he is out, then he would be a GPP guy. Josh the Hitman Hart at 3,700. We would absolutely go back to that despite the real turd in that last game. If KCP is out, if he is in, it's a strong stay away for Hart. Jaylen Brown's at 5,500. I think that's brilliant for cash. While Brandon Ingram at 58 is coming into the consideration. He played the last game, but he's still dealing with that ankle issue, and it is a negative matchup. So he's probably a guy to lean more towards tournaments, but that price does get me a little bit interested. At power forward, Larry Nance has been putting up some strong numbers, 5,900, but I don't think that this is a great spot at that price. It's too expensive in my mind. While Tatum at 5,600, way more comfortable in using him. And I think Marcus Morris is in play here. 4,700 for Morris. I think that's not a bad cash type of spot and a good situation. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, is at 5,200. He is averaging just 17 points in his last three games and under 25 in his last five. A bad matchup, definitely not cash worthy, I don't think. At center, Lopez, no. Brook Lopez, oh, sorry, that's him again. Julius Randle, 6,600. Had a monster in that last game with Kuzma limited, but I still think that at 6,600, he's a bit high. While Al Horford at 7,100, I feel think he is a good cash play. Probably a limited tournament guy, but he is a good cash option here. On DraftKings, I like Larry Nance at 5,000. Still more tournamenty, but that's a way better price. While Marcus Morris at 5,000 is in play, and Jordy Clarkson at 6,500. If we hear KCP's out, I think that is in play to use him. Kyrie at 8,900, probably a little bit too high. Horford and Randle aren't as appealing over on DraftKings here either. Let's run through the other sites as well now. On Yahoo, four tournaments. Larry Nance, Budrick Hield, Kyle O'Quinn as some tournament type guys. It's a really poor field on Yahoo, to be honest. And for cash and tournaments, Dan Green, Marcus Morris, Andre Robertson, Kim Birch, I don't know why I said Bursch like that. De'Aaron Fox, Skel Labissiere, Jaylen Brown, DeJounte Murray, and Bogdan Bogdanovic, Steve Adams, Paul George, Kyrie Irving, Aaron Gordon, and LaMarcus Aldridge. On Moneyball tournaments, Azza Gordon, Lord Alfred Payton, Budrick Hield, Skel Labissiere, Kem Birch, Kyle O'Quinn, Bryn Forbes, and for your cash end tournament guys, Jaylen, Jason, DeJounte Murray, Bogdan, Larry Nance, Evan Fournier, Spencer Dinwiddie, Kyle Anderson, Cawley Stein, Stephen Adams, Paul George, Kyrie, Draymond, LaMarcus, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and Russ Westbrook. And on DraftStars, I don't have to say don't play the target anymore because it went off today, amazingly. I don't know how many people ended up getting it, but that double overtime game with Boogie Cousins dropping like over 100 DraftStars points made the 400 target go off, so it was like $160,000. So congratulations to, I know it was D. Townsend that was one of the people, and I'm not sure who else ended up getting it, so congratulations to you guys. For tournaments, Russ Westbrook, Aaron Gordon, Julius Randle, Jarrett Jack, Kem Birch, Kyle O'Quinn, Bryn Forbes. And for cash and tournaments, we've got Hezonja, Robertson, Fox, Labissiere, Nance, DeJounte Murray, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Budrick, Isaiah Thomas, Cawley Stein, Steve Adams, LaMarcus Aldridge, Steph, KD, and LeBron. That wraps it up for today's show. If you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. And you can also find this podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify and on YouTube, where you can leave a thumbs up and a subscription and leave a comment below. And hopefully the audio is okay for today's show. Check out the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find your team every day. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Kevin Durant.